Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. Today is the third day of build. Today in the room, it's just me and, of course, our really special guest, Satya. Satya, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us all the cool things you're doing around ARM templates? Nice.
Hey, Cynthia, thanks for having me. So just to clarify, I'm the other Satya here at Microsoft. My name is Satya Vail. I'm the program manager for Azure deployments on the Azure team.
Awesome. So I just had the opportunity to attend the session, and there's a lot of very exciting announcements that came out. And one of the first things I want to touch on is that they mentioned, Vlad in the session mentioned that there are certain ARM client best practices that we want to follow. What are those best practices?
Yeah, so, you know, ARM clients are something that's super critical and is how you interact with the Azure resources. And really, it's how you use those clients is in an efficient and optimal consumption way through the APIs we provide. One of the examples is today, one of the big challenges customers have is they want to query what are the resources that are there in Azure, right? So instead of going and calling the ARM API directly and putting a lot of load on it, one of the things you can leverage is something called Azure Resource Graph. Azure Resource Graph is a service that we provide where it's essentially a cache of what's there in ARM that allows you to go and query all the different resources. And because it's built on top of the log analytics backend, which is another service that we provide for log analytics, you can write custom queries to query things in your environment, right? So for example, you can write a query to say, show me all the subscriptions that have a specific type of VM that is there, right? Or show me this specific property for these specific resources. Or you can do something complex, saying, let me join see which are the machines that have updates installed on them. So it gives you a lot of flexibility to query the different resources in ARM. And that's an example of some of the things that we provide as a best practice for our customers.
Awesome. And I think that kind of segued into my other thing that really caught my eye today was of after knowing what resources are available, I, as a customer, also want to be able to know what has happened to my resources, and now there is the capability of looking at change history.
Yeah, change history is pretty awesome. You know, one of the things that we all require is to know what happened, right? So if you're a regulated customer, one of the things you want to know is what changed in your environment. And we'd never really had a solution before, right? We had the activity logs that told you a list of all the changes, but there's no way to correlate what was previously and what has happened now. Change history is a capability where now we allow you to do a diff of what was the previous state of a resource and what's the new state, right? So for example, if someone went and made changes to specific tags that are associated to your resource, you're using change histories, you can exactly see what were the changes made for those resources.
So is that something that's available already or it's in preview?
Change history is available in preview today. You can use it. It's, again, a free service, so you don't need to pay anything for it. It's a capability we definitely encourage all our customers to use.
That is awesome. Mm. And I think that also leads really nicely into what are some of the new enhancements on ARM templates. Yeah. I know a lot of people just see ARM templates as JSON file, but from today's session, apparently there's a lot of investment we're putting into these, not just JSON file, ARM templates.
And just taking a step back, right? So ARM templates is our way to, in a declarative way, to describe what your infrastructure needs to look like, right? So the benefit of this is now you give you a way to repeatably create resources in Azure, right? And so I can write an ARM template that says I want to create a Cosmos database, a web app, and maybe a key vault to store all my secrets in there. And now if I want to create, take that environment and replicate it maybe 50 or 100 times, using an ARM template, I can just take that ARM template and deploy it multiple times across my various different resource groups, subscriptions, or different environments. And it gives me a really nice way to repeat and create those environments.
So really taking a step back, how should people that are just starting their cloud journey think about ARM templates? Is that something we should begin with, or is that something that is kind of an afterthought after I've did a couple of trial and errors?
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime you get into a sort of programming language, right, which to a certain extent ARM templates are, it's a little daunting, right? And at first you look at the JSON and it's something that you don't necessarily like to want to get to into first. So one of the things we encourage our customers to do is actually go and create these resources in the Azure portal, right? Azure portal is a great experience where you can go and drag and drop and create all the resources that you need. And one of the things that we provide is we give you the ability to export these resources, right? So I can go and say, I want to set up a Cosmos DB web app, and then I want to basically use the portal to export the template, the ARM template. And once I have the ARM template, now I don't need to go and know how to set up the JSON. It's given to me in a format that I can use and consume and just modify it, so to speak, right? So I'm not starting from scratch. I've given a nice boilerplate where now I just need to input the parameters and deploy that template.
And I know I've definitely had that exact same experience where I'm starting out and looking at, they used to be called automation scripts, but they have a new name now.
Yeah. And so one of the, again, the feedback that we got was customers were confused with the name automation script, which is how you actually went and exported templates. Because, you know, they thought it was creating an Azure automation, which is a different service. It's a script for that. So we now actually call it what it is supposed to be called, which is export template. So if you go into the Azure portal, you can go into any resource or resource group. You can now see a node called export template, which allows you to export the resources that you want.
And I remember one of my first experience when I tried exporting was that there are very, very long parameter names.
Yeah.
They are very, very, just very well descripted, that almost feels like it's overfitting for a template, and that it's actually very hard to use.
Yeah.
And I've definitely have better experience using one of the quick start templates than when I'm trying to export one.
Yeah.
And it also exports the entire resource group.
Yeah.
What do I do if I only want, like, I only want my VM, I only want my VNet?
Great question, right? And so that was one of the big challenges is previously, until a couple of weeks ago, you could only export the whole entire resource group or nothing at all. But with the new investments that we made, we now actually support exporting either a single resource from that resource group, or you can multi-select the resources that you want to export and export that template out. So what basically the portal now is becoming is an ARM template generator for you, a visual way to just go and say, here are the resources I want, let me pick those and just export out an ARM template, which I can now take and deploy. And to your second question, which was, you know, sometimes we over-parameterize things in the ARM template, which is a real pain for our customers. And so we've invested a lot of time and effort actually making sure that the template we output is really clean, and we try our best to kind of match what our customers' expectations of what they're trying to do with those templates.
Can you talk us through on the journey of how your team got to know, like, oh, this is too many parameters, or what the customers really like? How have you been receiving that feedback, and how's your team been implementing those feedback into development?
Yeah, so to be honest with you, and again, I want to take my other step back. So one of the things that we did was when Satya was the president for Cloud,
other
and
Satya?
The other Satya was the president of Cloud and AI, one of the things he wanted to do was to really figure out, how do we get teams at Microsoft to be customer obsessed, right? And so he started this program called Moneyball. I don't know how familiar you are with that, but essentially it was a way for us to really sit down, come up with a set of hypotheses, and test those hypotheses with the customer, right? And so part of what we did was we knew there were a lot of pains around the ARM area and ARM templates. And so we spent a lot of time talking to the top 100 Azure customers, really coming up with a set of hypotheses and testing out, trying to understand what were the pain behind some of these areas and what was the biggest challenges. And out of that was really how we came up, and we realized that a ton of customers were using export as their way to do, to generate templates, but we just left them, you know, halfway there. We didn't take them that extra mile and really and clean up that scenario. And so part of this journey was really us discovering and figuring out what were those big gaps or potholes, as we call them, and how do we address those potholes was something that we did, really being customer obsessed and figuring out what our customers were doing, what were the actions that we were taking, and fixing those actions.
So I'm really curious, has there been something that has been really surprising where product group is going one direction, but the feedback you're hearing from customers is completely different? And how has that experience been for you?
You know, I think in the older Microsoft days, I think that happened a lot where but teams, with product teams, maybe go and just come up with an idea and say, hey, you know, I think customers want this, and throw it over the fence and, you know, have folks like yourself go and have to go sell it and market it. But now, you know, we have a pretty rigorous process where any new feature has to be backed by customer data, right? And customer data is not talking to one or two customers. It's talking to 80 to 100 customers, right? Getting qualitative data and quantitative data, right? So doing surveys with over 1,000 customers and seeing where they stack rank this capability versus something else, and then coming with that data and having our exec leadership team sponsor these investments is really how we've become really customer focused, and we are starting to delight our customers, right? You could see from the applause that we had today in our session, you know, once you identify and empathize with the customer pain, you'll get those automatic reactions, which is very gratifying as a program manager.
Definitely. And is the best method for our listeners to get feedback through user voice, or what is the channels that your team look at?
Yeah, so, you know, if you have this, there's a feature that you want, user voice is a great way to go and vote on these ideas, right? So we actively, constantly monitor user voice to see what ideas have been voted, what are the key challenges that are there. Another forum is to just email us, right? We are always open to getting feedback. My email address is satyavale@microsoft.com, or you can follow me on Twitter @satya_vale, and you know, that's another way a lot of customers actually reach out to me saying, hey, I have this issue, can you help me out? And unfortunately or fortunately, Twitter has become a support channel as well for some of us.
It's very interesting because we had two other sets of speakers yesterday, yeah, and they were also talking about the same thing, where Twitter has become the platform for a lot of developer interactions. And thus, I finally made my Twitter account yesterday because everyone was shaming me on not having one. So now I do.
Yeah. And you can't live in the Bay Area without having a Twitter account. That's just not cool. So
I thought having LinkedIn profile was cool, but apparently having Twitter is the new cool thing. So we talked a lot about some of the investments, how we're listening to customer feedback. Now comes to the decision of, why do we use ARM templates? There's a lot of other automation tools. A lot of people are talking about Terraform. What are some of the things listeners or customers have to consider when they're thinking about putting, implementing infrastructure as code?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? And to be honest with you, our answer to any of this is use the tool that you're most comfortable with, right? At the end of the day, we want customers to be successful on Azure. And so one of the things that we recommend customers is use whatever, whether it's PowerShell, CLI, Terraform, or ARM templates, use what you're comfortable with. But with that given, you know, there are certain benefits of using something that's platform native. So what I mean by that is ARM templates are baked into the platform. So when you do a deployment in Azure, we actually track that deployment. So if you go to the portal, you can actually see that a deployment occurred. You can track what happened in that deployment. Whereas if you use a third-party solution, none of that is actually registered at all. So you can see whether your Terraform deployment was successful or not. None of that information is tracked. In addition to that, right, one of the things of using the platform native capability is any new service that is released, whether it's in preview or a GA service, on day one, you have an ARM template available for it, right? It makes it pretty powerful because people don't want to go and use the portal to create resources. They want an ARM template that they can take and just automate in their deployment or integrate it into their CI/CD pipeline. And using that capability, you know, gives you day one support for a lot of the resources that are there in Azure.
Definitely. So kind of going back to writing up those ARM templates, has there been any improvements on the developer tools on where you're able to see each of the different parameters and have those different colors maybe?
Awesome question, right? I think one of the things that we learned from our customer interactions was we've actually didn't do a really good job building tools around authoring ARM templates, right? VS Code is a preferred choice by a lot of customers to author various different, whether it's authoring their code or the templates. It's their preference. It's their really their tool of choice. And so one thing that we've done is we've actually doubled down and we've released a new ARM template VS Code extension. And what that extension does is basically it's an add-on that you can go to the marketplace, installs, it gets added to your VS Code IDE environment. And then it, when you actually take an ARM template and paste it in there, it really starts to light it up. And what I mean by that, it gives you things such as IntelliSense, autocomplete, syntax highlighting, so you can now actually make out the difference between a function that's in the ARM template or a loop that's there. It really calls those out very clearly. And in addition, we are actually investing on doing things such as adding snippets, right? So for example, you come in, you open a VS Code, you want to start and create your new virtual machine that you want to deploy, right? You don't want to go and copy the template, pull it in, and then figure out, oh, I need a network resource to be added as well. So one of the things that we're looking at doing is doing something where you right-click and say, hey, I want to create a VM. We essentially just bring in the whole snippet for what it's going to take to create a virtual machine, including the dependent resources. And now all you need to do is just tweak the parameters that are there. And boom, from there, you can click deploy and it'll create those resources for you.
So before I click deploy, can I validate my resources? And has that experience been improved as well?
Yeah. So ARM natively has what we call pre-flight capabilities, right? So we do some basic checks to make sure that the template is valid and it can be deployed. This is an area we always continue to invest in because there's, you know, tons of different resources that are there and the tons of different validation checks.
And you don't want to wait 30 minutes until you've deployed all your resources to find out.
Yeah, if something is not there, right?
Exactly.
So one of the new capabilities that we're announcing is called What If. And essentially what if does is it gives you a way to go and predict what the deployment's going to be like without actually having to deploy. So a lot of times, you know, customers would go write an ARM template, kick off the deployment, and if it's a pretty big deployment, you know, it might take 10, 15 minutes, and then in the last phase it'll fail, and then you'll get the sad phase, right?
And the error message also wasn't very clear in my past experiences where you know the deployment failed, but
why?
Why?
Yeah, exactly. So twofold. So one is what if helps you really determine what's going to change. So the example I gave is, you know, before jumping off a cliff, you know, you want to know, is there ocean below or is there hard rocks or is there a net that's going to protect you? And essentially what if lets you do is say, hey, if you jump from here, you know, there's water and so you'll be fine, right? And here's what's going to change. And so that's really what if does. Is without actually doing a full deployment, it tells you what are the resources that are going to be changed, what properties are going to be changed. And so that's a really nice capability that we're introducing that's going to help a lot of customers. And then secondly, you know, error handling is something that is just bread and butter. It needs to be done right. Nobody gets, you don't get an A for doing it, right? It's something that just customers expect you to handle errors properly. And so we have invested a lot in really going and making sure that the error messages are clean. And this is going to be an ongoing investment. There's still going to be customers who run into errors that don't make sense. But we've actually put a lot of effort and emphasis to start to clean up the first set of errors that are there, find the most common ones, and really make sure those error messages are clear and concise.
So I'm curious, what happens in the back end when I'm trying to do a what if? Like, is there something, what is getting simulated?
Yeah. So essentially, what we do is we have a copy of what that template that got deployed in your environment is. And we take the new template that you have and we look at what are the key differences that are going to happen, right? And we expose those differences to you because we make an API call. We go and see what are the properties that are set on those resources. We pull those back and we do a diff to show you what exactly is going to be changed. So you have some confidence saying, okay, when I deploy this, it's going to be successful. Or when I deploy this, these are the settings that are going to get changed. Really making it a lot more predictable about what you can deploy and how it's going to go.
Okay. And I know one of the examples we were seeing was that there's a typo on the name of the resource and that now it becomes creating a new one.
Exactly.
But with what if you're able to catch that before you start deploying a new, I think it was an AKS cluster that was the example.
Yeah, you're perfect. That's a great example that you just gave right there where I could kick off the deployment and it would go create 3 AKS clusters because I had a typo in the name. But with what if now I can actually detect and say, hey, why is this something that's getting modified? And then pick up that change and see exactly what that change is going to be is pretty powerful.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So taking one step back from ARM templates, I know Azure Blueprint was announced
at Ignite in September.
So still relatively new.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to use it myself. Can you talk to us a little bit about how we should approach it, when we should think about using it, and what are some of the key factors that we need to consider when we use it?
Yeah. You know, the whole, again, going back to really being customer obsessed, one of the things we learned was there was a new role that was emerging in a lot of organizations of the cloud architect, right? Or the cloud center of excellence is what it's referred to in a lot of organizations. Essentially, it's a group of folks from security background, networking, infrastructure management that were really helping the app teams figure out how they should leverage Azure in a safe and secure manner, right? And so one thing that they spent a lot of time doing is these center of excellence teams were defining what were the set of the policies, what were the infrastructure components that needed to go inside a subscription, what were the RBAC, role-based access controls. And so they spent a lot of time essentially writing a whole bunch of scripts to try and create what we call a well-governed subscription. And that was a real pain because imagine if something fails in the script, you know, you're left with resources that are not in a good state. You don't know what got completed successfully or not, which is, you know, you can imagine what a pain it is. And so what Blueprints does is the sole purpose is to create what we call governed environments or governed subscriptions. And it gives you a great experience in the portal where you can go and bring in your ARM templates. So for example, you, as part of a new subscription creation, you might want to create VNets with subnets. You might want people to use log analytics for collecting all the diagnostic logs. You might want to set up a key vault for using for your secrets management. And then you might want to add policies, right? Your company might say that, hey, we want to make sure that resources are only deployed within the United States data centers.
Or no one creates like crazy VMs to mine some Bitcoins for gaming purposes.
That is a perfect example, right? Is you don't want someone spinning up N or M series VM that costs you a lot of money. And so essentially writing a policy, you can go and enforce and say that, hey, if for my these environments, I just want people to use A and B series VMs. And what's great about policy, for example, is because it's built into the ARM platform, regardless of whether a developer tries to create that resource from PowerShell or CLI or through the portal, it'll actually protect that person, right? So it'll make sure that we don't give them any backdoor to create those resources, which is pretty amazing. And so Blueprints essentially brings us all together. It gives you a nice package of what your environment looks like. And what we see a lot of enterprises is now every time an app team comes and says, I want to try it Azure, they essentially take a blueprint, stamp it on a subscription, which puts all the guardrails, the infrastructure that's required. And now the app team can, you know, with confidence go and deploy the application, not have to have this constant back and forth with these cloud architects, and know that, you know, their environment is protected and governed from the get-go.
Are there some quick start templates for the blueprint, because I feel like this is still a very new idea. Well, it's not a new idea of templatizing a lot of things, but the idea of also including the governance piece is still relatively new. How is there any place where people can get started more easily?
Yeah. So one of the things that we did was our own internal teams at Microsoft actually need to meet various different regulatory compliance needs. And so one of the things that they've done is built a whole bunch of blueprints for things such as ISO, HIPAA, SOC, various different regulatory compliances. And one thing that we've heard from customers is like, hey, you guys have done the hard work, which is taking these policies and mapping them to the various different ISO controls, for example, or figuring out how the infrastructure should be set up to meet these requirements. And essentially what that team has done is taken their expertise and published what we call built-in blueprints. So when you go to the Azure Blueprints experience today, when you click create, one of the options we give you is to pick from a built-in blueprint. So we have an example, an ISO blueprint where you can launch, which will give you a set of policies, ARM templates that tell you that, hey, by using these policies and templates, you map and meet these requirements for ISO, for example, right? And so making it really easy for our customers, especially the regulated ones, to get jump-started and not have to go and start from scratch.
That's awesome. And I know the last part that was covered in the build session was the extensibility of ARM templates, and that was something completely new to me.
So one of the things that one of the audiences is we have various different partners, right? And partners want to provide what we call box solutions to their customers. So one of the things that we announced today, it's been out for a while, but some of the investments that we made is something called managed applications, which gives you a great way for a partner to go and define what the application needs to look like while retaining some of the proprietary IP about that application to themselves, right? So think about it as giving a customer a box which they can leverage, but a lot of the information or the knowledge of how the inner workings are hidden from them. And it gives them a nice way where now they can take this managed application and deploy it across their environments as well.
So last but not least, what are some of the updates that are coming up in the next couple months that we can look forward to?
Yeah, so I think the three big things that I'm going to talk about, one is, you know, we're making a whole bunch of investments around the export. So we want export to be your template generator experience. And so we're continuing to make a lot of investments. That's something that you're going to see. The VS Code improvements that I talked about, those will be, again, the public preview of the enhanced one is going to be coming up in the next couple of months as well, which will give you some of the snippet capabilities that I talk about. And then what if, which we demoed today in build, is just in its really early beta stages. And so we're hoping we'll get it out as a public preview in the next couple of months.
Are there thoughts of combining What If into the Azure DevOps pipeline?
Yeah, and again, another very astute question, I guess, is you can actually, one of the key scenarios is you want to know what is the impact of your deployment, right? And so you want to see that information. So that is something that we plan to expose in Azure DevOps, so you can actually see that, right? Because not everyone comes to the portal and does the diff or uses the command line. And so integrating that experience is definitely something that we want to enable.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.